You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 6th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the David Brooks I'm Back at Work Open Bar Gala, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Why are they always out of rum?
Because Mike Barnacle drinks all the good shit in the morning and Peggy Noonan comes in at noon and polishes it off. Ay, 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 ay. David Brooks has returned. We'll get to that in a few minutes.
Yeah, we want to start by catching up with a couple of letters that came in. A lot of letters came to us right before Thanksgiving, and we're very grateful. I want to thank my friend who I went to college with, Lee, for writing such a nice note. And we got a letter from a listener. I can't remember his name, but he openly derided every liberal host of every liberal show for not doing a Thanksgiving show, for taking the week off. I think including Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. Everybody and said, I mean, the professional left put out a show on Thanksgiving.
You people.
So what is wrong with you people?
You know, yeah. Come on.
Guys. You people. I'm not saying if we weren't under contract with an agent, we wouldn't take Thanksgiving week off.
I'd be on a 3-month book leave.
You'd be up. Yeah. I'm sorry. Drift Glass is on book leave. Steve Kornacki is sitting in for Drift Glass. We're talking about New Jersey politics. Okay. But we got a couple nice letters I'd like to read to get started. Our friend Jean writes, and she writes to us all the time, and we love Jean. Jean says, I am thankful that even though I have health problems, I'm dealing with them, and at this time, I'm doing okay. I am thankful that my son, his wife, and my three beautiful grandchildren are doing well. Their parents have jobs, and the kids are doing well in school. That's a lot to be grateful for, Jean.
Yeah, that's everything.
I am thankful that the Democrats stood together during the shutdown, fought the filibuster, and are making health care. Sad that now that the health care is not going smoothly, they panic instead of come out fighting like Republicans do. Ask Republicans, what is your answer for giving those in need health care? The GOP will have to fess up and say what they feel. They do not give a rat's ass about the people. I am thankful that you two give an honest podcast without a boss whose ass you must kiss. I hope you stay with it. I am a loyal fan who has listened every week since you started, sometimes from my treadmill or while eating breakfast on a Saturday morning. Thanks, Jean. That's a very nice letter.
Thanks, Jean. And the faxes we get from the White House telling us what to say and think every week.
They appreciate you, too.
We just sort of blend those into the background so you never notice them. We have that kind of skill set.
We have never gotten a fax from the
White House. I take care of them, honey. The part where Jean and I don't part company, but the part where it sort of becomes a subject for discussion is where ask Republicans what your answer is. That's never going
to
happen.
Answer to who?
That's never exactly. They're never going to answer that question. You really, and I mean this very seriously, you have to. We liberals, we progressives, the ones who write very elegant columns about, and now we can finally put to rest the rumor that Republicans care about anyone. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. That's never going to happen. No one is ever going to call them to account for this. No one is ever going to ask them any hard questions. Mm-hmm. No one in the mainstream media, David Gregory and his crowd, are never going to invite them on their show and ask them a hard question.
And really the question that this podcast continually asks is, why does no one ever get kicked off of the Beltway gravy train?
Right. It's not.
It is a static thing to just keep both sides.
Incestuous
closed system. Or wrong, and not call anyone on the right responsible.
It's a scam. I mean, really, it is. No matter what atrocity a Republican commits, come Sunday morning, they will find some reason to talk about Barack Obama's lack of leadership or Nancy Pelosi or some fantasy liberal somewhere, because their job is to diffuse criticism of conservatives.
But I think Elizabeth Warren really hit it on the head in her speech before the shutdown, where she pointed out that it's not just liberal anymore. They've actually changed it to government.
Yes, government itself.
And we've seen lots of examples of this. It's just like both sides.
Yeah.
Once you start to have to look for it, seeing where someone says, you know,
the government.
Government wants.
Government's incompetent.
The government new normal wants. For government.
Government hates.
Government hates. Government is a boogeyman. That's what she said.
Well, government is a monolith.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, there are people in the government called Republicans who have a vested interest in wrecking the institution and making and making sure that you can't have government anymore. And
because
then
you have no defense. The government, and government, what we mean by that is government of the people,
right,
is your only defense against corporate malfeasance.
Yes.
And so we just want to be Citizens United and run over everybody, and profit is the only thing that matters. You don't need clean drinking water. We'll have fracking fluid in your drinking water, and that's just too bad. And that really, folks, that's not a hyperbole. That it really is happening.
That really is.
In Western Pennsylvania, there are towns that lost their clean water supply to the gas companies. And the gas companies are not responsible because the governor says so.
Yeah.
And he's a bought and paid for whore of the natural gas companies.
Chris Hayes, bless his heart, touched on this. We want to get to another letter, but I want to touch on the fact that Chris Hayes mentioned in passing. First of all, he didn't mention this part. This is not... You will not hear us focusing heavily on conservatives. I mention them a lot. I mention them an awful lot. But honest to God, they're just a lost cause.
Yeah.
But they cannot exist without a centrist, both-siderist media in the middle doing their bidding for them by diffusing all criticism as if, well, everyone does it. Everyone's wrong. Everyone's bad. Those people, the people who are their bagmen, who drive the getaway car for the conservative movement, those are the very rich David Brooks's, David Gregory's, people like that, mm-hmm. people who sit in the middle and say both sides, both sides, both sides for every time anyone comes up with a criticism. They are the problem. That's where you stick the crowbar if you want to pry the system apart, right there. And what Chris Hayes accurately pointed out the other day was it's not just getting angry about it. It's we have to guard against losing our capacity to imagine that it will ever be different.
That's true.
Because it's been so bad for mm-hmm. so long. Mm-hmm. And David Gregory has basically shit, you know, all over the idea of journalism for so long. Mm-hmm. David Brooks has been so fucking incompetent, such a liar for
so long. And sitting at the top of the New York Times columnist list.
That we just shrug it off. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. It isn't how it is. It's how some very rich person who runs the New York Times, part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
That runs the New York Times decides that David Brooks should occupy that position. Mm-hmm. The people who fund Meet the Press decide that David Gregory never has to answer for mm-hmm. anything he does. They're the people who are putting this stuff out there. Mm-hmm. These are conscious decisions people are making every day.
It is the military-industrial complex hour.
Yeah.
That's what it absolutely is. Yeah, yeah.
And it's big energy and it's big pharma mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. insurance and it's healthcare. And it's money. It's money, 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 yep. money, money, money. And they are deciding on your behalf what you will and will not be allowed to listen to. And the idea that people have been writing really brutal, excoriating, can you believe this fucker has a job, columns about David Brooks for a decade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For a decade.
Yep. It'll be 10 years next year for me.
And it absolutely doesn't affect him in any way.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't touch him at all. He just glides right through his life from one television show to a radio show to another television show to the highest point in American journalism. At the end of the day, he collects a gigantic paycheck, takes as much time off as he wants, comes right back to the table, and nothing touches him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
And we give up. I think that additional part of it that Chris Hayes brought up,
yeah.
that then we just shrug our shoulders and say, well, we can't do anything about David Brooks because he's permanent.
Yeah.
And truth can outweigh lies. It really can.
And Peggy Noonan is permanent. Matthew Dowd is permanent. Yeah. And George Stephanopoulos is permanent. These are people who are absolute fixtures of the center of the media.
Do you remember the time when – I'm sorry to interrupt you. Do you remember
Please.
The time on Real Time where Ross Duhat was on there and he was trying – there was a lot of crosstalk and he was trying to interject. And he actually said, but the Democrats.
Yes.
And he got interrupted. I just looked at you and said, he just said, but the Democrats.
Yes, because that's what he's paid to say.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he's paid to say. Everything else is just
of your jokes. So.
Yeah. It is against that gray, overly funded, powerful army of mediocrity that keeps telling you, both sides are awful. Both sides are terrible. Both sides are to blame. Who just squash, who flatten every criticism of every Republican atrocity with a constant drumbeat. Well-funded, incredibly well-funded drumbeat of the same big lie over and over and over and over and over and over again for year after year. They're the ones who have to be made personally uncomfortable with their career choices before anything is going to change. But that's where we concentrate our fire.
And we
fuck Rush Limbaugh.
Through Twitter and Both Sides Don't and other social media platforms and this podcast. So
let's talk about Jude.
Oh, you want to talk about Jude? She's awesome.
You want to read?
Yeah, I do. I'll read it because she's so awesome. Jude said, hey, Driftglass. Excuse me. She said me first. Hey, Blue Gallon Driftglass. The Professional Left is the best left podcast. The only one that does not let any fascist weasel lies go unchallenged. You're so good that I sometimes forget you're straight.
Yeah. I don't, but.
Well, what did you say in the car? We forgot you were gay, Jude.
Yeah. Our God forgives you.
Oh, that's so awful.
I know. See? See?
You're
See what I did there, Jude?
You're so
See what
bad.
I did?
You are so bad.
It just seemed like a teachable moment to me.
Bad person. She says, I sometimes forget you're straight. And for a radical queer, that's saying something. You'll recall that the left was suspect and sometimes still is when we were fighting for our lives 30 years ago, really until DOMA Section 3 was overturned. You're on the ramparts with us now. I must say that all this acceptance is a bit much at times. I miss being a sexual outlaw. Oh, well, I guess I'll get married if we win in the Pennsylvania court. It doesn't seem to have hampered true joy of living.
So let me
jump right in, Jude.
So Jude, you're trading your outlaws for in-laws.
Yeah. Well, I said that. You know, she's the last person I would accuse of being a sexual in-law. That's what I told her.
Yeah. Well, there you go, Jude. And
she said, you're right. Elizabeth Warren must be in the Senate raising hell. She'll get a boost from Cory Booker. I tweeted him when he won. You're my senator, too, until we can unseat Toomey. Now, I worry a little bit about Cory Booker being in bed with Wall Street.
Yeah.
Until you hold him up next to Pat Toomey.
Right.
So.
Yeah. All cats are gray after dark, as Ben Franklin, I believe, said.
Yeah.
But then the lights come on. You go, whoa, wait a minute. No,
wait a minute. No.
There's, you know. Now, mind you, I would be hard pressed to ever find anything nice to say about Harold Ford Jr., for example.
Well, he's got a job. He's employed.
He is.
You know. I'm sure he loves his cat.
He does. And his I'm sure he has, you know, his model wife and his walk-in humidor and his $12,000 suits. They're all paid for. And he pays for it by going on the TV
and saying things like, you know, this sequester's not going to hurt anybody. It's you know, the sky's not going to fall. It hasn't fallen yet.
And my close friend Alex over here, and
Alex
my close
Perrine?
Personal friend
or no, yeah, not my, Alex Perrine, oh, Alex
Castellano. My close personal friend Alex, my close personal friend Newt Gingrich, my close personal friend. You know, we just need to get along and find it and learn that the extremes on the left are just as bad as the extremes on the right. That's really, he's a wind up fucking toy. That's all he does. Literally, that is literally all he does is go on television, look at the camera, and talk about how both sides are awful, and he makes and walks off with a sack of money. That is your media. That's it. And you know, the Dave Weigel was talking about this hoax that we'll talk about in a little bit, but he was tweeting like, look, you know, TV journalism is dead.
Yeah, yeah.
The internet is all we have, because if you're looking for the truth on television, you are just profoundly
screwed.
Fucked.
Yeah.
You know, Colbert Report and Daily Show. That's really it. There's nothing left of television journalism. There's just the three-ring mouse circus. And occasionally in the middle of the evening, there's a couple of actual liberals on MSNBC talking about liberal stuff. But, you know, that's balanced out by Joe Scarborough and Chuck Todd talking about Joe Scarborough shit and Chuck Todd shit. So there is, you know, and the thing is, it's not as if this were, I don't know, bass fishing where there's just not a lot to talk about. There's really enormous, big, weighty, scary, terrifying issues that require immediate public attention that really could use discussing. And the media, the method we have for discussing those things is controlled by people who are hell-bent on never discussing them seriously, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even the president of the United States has finally just had it.
Yep.
You know, now that he doesn't have to run for re-election. He really is
put up,
you know,
or shut up time on healthcare, and he's just he's I think trying to shortcut these attacks, which are never going to end,
right?
By saying put up or shut up. If you've got something to make it better, let me know. But otherwise, it's not going to get repealed, and we're done talking about it.
And they're, and we'll talk again about this a little bit too. I mean, they're talking openly now about impeachment. Oh, for nothing. I mean, you know, well, pick, you know, Benghazi, Fast and Furious, the IRS. You pick whichever one you want. We can impeach this guy for anything. You know, if you are surprised by this, you need to have your eyes sewn open and be forced to watch the Clinton years.
Yep.
Because it's the same fucking playbook. It is first the verdict, then the trial. First the sentence, then the trial. They decided this guy needed to be run out of office, demolished.
In January of 2009, when he put his hand on the Bible, they were ready to go. And they have
been gunning for him ever since. So the idea that, oh my God, they're considering impeachment. Of course they're considering impeachment. Of course they are. And they will continue to do so until, again, they are made incredibly uncomfortable. Until their money is taken away from them. Until they are shamed in public. Until it becomes a thing of an embarrassment to admit you were ever a member or associated with the Republican Party.
But I don't see how that's going to happen, because the bribery goes through Wall Street. So you're bribed by owning stock in companies that do well because you pay people to make the policy go the way it will make you richer.
It helps to cut off the next rebranding effort. The next time you see them dive for the tri-corner hats and pretend that they were never part of the Republican Party, that's the point at which the hermit crab has lost one shell and is scuttling around for the next one. That's the point at which you can drive a stake through it and say, no, you people were personally responsible for what fucked this country up. And we're not going to let you get away with it again. We're not going to let you change your stripes and pretend that you're some brand new movement. We have no idea what the fuck happened, and go right back to being the same disaster creating monstrosity you've always been. But again, until someone walks up to David Gregory at his coffee shop, like those two young ladies did with John Boehner.
He has coffee. Doesn't he have coffee at the Chevy Chase Country?
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he pays lots of people to make sure that the filthy, you know, the filthy peons never get near him. Mm-hmm. But until they walk up to him and shove a camera in his face and say, hey, you know, Alec, you know that big story about Alec, you know, that Republican.
Well, and I wanted to bring that up, actually, because Carolee has been really going to town.
Carolee is.
She is at Crooks and Liars, of course. And she's been really going to town on this Alec thing. Their playbook has been outed by The Guardian. And they apparently have now what is called the Prodigal Son Program. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
The Prodigal Son is to bring back to the fold the 40 corporations, including McDonald's and Walmart, to fund their organization, because small donations don't cut it. And they have lost huge amounts of money by pushing for more stand-your-ground laws after the Trayvon Martin killing.
By using public tragedy to make money for their clients. By cold-heartedly and deliberately. I mean, the worst kind of criminal in prison, you'd have to go way down deep into the tombs of a prison to find someone that fucking cold that would find the murder of a child, see in the murder of a child an opportunity to turn a buck for a corporation. And yet that's what they do. And they do it all across the country. They're the ones who write model legislation for Republican governors to implement on everything from making sure black people can't vote to stand your ground laws. And somebody finally took their playbook and published it and said, no, it's not like a random thing. This, mind you, this is news to nobody who's been paying attention to liberal media.
Right.
Alec has been a story for a couple of years now, at least a couple of years now. Thank you, Rachel Maddow. But apparently it's now reached the point where the amount of embarrassment that being a member of Alec carries with it has caused the people who write the big fat checks to run away.
Yeah. And there is a list at Crooks and Liars. We'll post this link of who the prodigals are. And it's huge company. It's Hewlett Packard. It's Amazon. It's Blue Cross Blue Shield. It's Procter & Gamble. It's Unilever. It's Johnson & Johnson. Yeah. It goes on and on and on. And what was fascinating to me.
How many of those funds are the Professional Left Podcast, Blue Gal?
Zero.
How many large checks do.
Zero.
Zero. Okay. Just so we're clear about the battlefield, where the levelness of the battlefield that we're on.
Yeah. Here. Well, one of the things I found fascinating about this story is that some of these companies actually dropped their memberships with Alec after they failed to get what they wanted out of Alec.
Yeah, so
Blue Cross Blue Shield left after Obamacare passed. They were gone,
And you failed me for the last time.
And Coventry Healthcare evidently joined because of a, quote, single issue, which is no longer an issue. Oh, Coventry Healthcare. I wonder what was an issue and is no longer an issue there.
It's a delivery system for ideological
lobbying. For lobbying.
For very
billions
wealthy.
Billions of dollars of lobbying.
Yeah. Right-wing crackpot ideas into the hands of crackpot right-wing governors.
Absolutely.
Under the guise of citizen
and citizen action. Activism to keep the minimum wage low.
Yeah, because that's,
that's really the number one thing.
I wake up in the morning, I worry that they're going to raise the minimum wage. I can't sleep over it.
I can't sleep over them raising. They might have to raise the minimum wage just to keep the hoi polloi.
To where it was under Truman, the adjusted dollar. You know?
And now it turns off that turns out that Republicans are going to run to say that they are the ones protecting Medicare from Obama.
Yeah.
That's the plan for 2016.
Well, they did that already.
Yeah, it's a rerun. And it's a rerun, just like War on Christmas is a rerun. So.
Yeah. And it worked once.
Yeah, well, and it might work again. If all you watch is Fox, it's probably work.
Well, and see, here's the point. And here's the point. Charles Pierce.
Yes, at Esquire.
And Esquire wrote a very nice column about Alec and how reporters no longer have any excuse to pretend they didn't know what was going on. It's all out there. It's et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Again, that's the point. Like our letter from Gene, who, you know, I love Gene dearly. Yeah. That's the point at which I just go, don't you get it? Of course they can continue lying about it. Of course they can continue.
No
pretending.
Accountability. They there's never get off no the gravy train of there, the Beltway. That's it.
There is no grown-up walking around out
kicking
there on
them
the
off
perimeter
the train.
Making sure people behave themselves and that liars are punished and that people who pimp their awful ideological crap on Fox are fired when it comes out, oh, my goodness, they were lying. And they've been lying for 20 years. There's nobody, you know, forcing Rush Limbaugh off the air, not because we want to deny him his free rights and his First Amendment rights, but because a gigantic blowhard lying racist asshole like that should be shunned in any civilized society.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nobody who's again, I hate to, you know, focus on Mr. Gregory, but he really is kind of the pinnacle of Bullshit Mountain.
Yeah, he is.
There's nobody who's going to force him to cover this story. Yep. And if it leaks onto the air, what he'll do is he'll bring on someone to talk about Benghazi or whatever.
Yep.
And it will nullify it. It'll be, well, it's confusing because both sides. And then we'll move on.
So
to
what
the
do
next.
You think about Benghazi, Chuck Todd?
Yeah.
Is this the president's Katrina or is it the president's Iraq?
Yeah. Oh God.
Don't get me started. Kidding. Okay. I want to talk about, do you mind if I read this very sad letter that was written into Malcolm Burko? Taking stock guy. I read this to you at lunch today.
Read it. Read the salient portion of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we're running out of time, but this is amazing. There's a syndicated columnist. He's been around since 82 or so. And his name is Malcolm Burko. He is a former stock market guy and writes a column that's syndicated in business pages called Taking Stock. But someone wrote into him and it's just the funniest, saddest letter I think I've ever read. Dear Mr. Burko, I have arthritis pretty bad, and I've been taking 200 milligram Celebrex pill daily. The pills help, but I still have very bad pain. Celebrex cost me $5.80 a pill. I don't have insurance. I can afford it, but it makes me very angry because the identical pill in the same size only cost me 70 cents when my wife and I were living and working in Mexico City.
Ho, ho, ho.
Now, you'd think the answer to this issue would go down several different roads, right?
Yeah.
You may be eligible for Obamacare. You'll be able to buy on the exchanges. We know you have a pre-existing condition because you're on arthritis, but you'll definitely be able to decrease your prescription costs by getting some insurance. He's paying $157 a month just for one pill a day.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly putting that toward insurance would be a better buy for him.
Yeah.
And then the idea that in another industrialized country in North America where they have single payer,
yes,
the pill is 70 cents. Okay.
Yeah.
So you think that's where we're going?
Where Pfizer doesn't write their laws.
Right.
So, yeah.
So you think this is where he's going with this? Then he says, 2 years ago.
Who's he? Which he
The author of this letter who has arthritis. 2 years ago, our Labrador retriever had arthritis. The veterinarian prescribed him a once a day pill. This pill costs 60 cents a pill, and they worked very well on my dog. Our dog died last March, and we didn't toss his unused medication, so I decided to try it. It works better than Celebrex. He took his dog's pill, okay?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have insurance, And yeah. his human pill is $5.80 a pill. The dog pill. I mean, this is cat food.
I'm starting to lactate, but that's okay.
This is the cat food convention. You know, the
yeah.
cat, what was it called?
The
cat food thing. Yeah.
Committee.
This is about
austerity.
And let's just have seniors take dog medicine instead.
Come on, scrounge around the dumpster. You'll find something. Go ahead.
So I took
the
dog's unused pills, and they worked better than the Celebrex.
I feel great now. You know what else will make you feel great? Meth.
However, the veterinarian will not write me a prescription for it.
Fucking socialist veterinarian. I bet he's gay, or she's gay.
Bet she's gay.
Uh-huh.
All right. But here's my question.
Yeah.
Malcolm Burko.
Yeah.
Who makes this fantastic dog drug? Because I would like to own the stock.
Yeah. Jesus. Where can I invest in this fantastic dog drug?
Company. But now I have to give Malcolm Burko a pass because this is his job, is to answer investment questions. He's not a doctor. He's not an insurance expert. He's not a medical expert. He's not going to take this on and answer it in a medical way. And the first thing he says is, you need to talk to your doctor about this. Yeah. And that's good advice. Got it. I'm not going to blame him for saying, go talk to your doctor about this, because really, this is not a good, you know, this is something you're taking some risks. So, all right, fine. Then he says, he wants to tell you about Celebrex. Celebrex is a $1.8 billion revenue blockbuster drug manufactured by Pfizer, PFE. It was due to come off patent May 30th, 2014. It's an enormously profitable prescriptive, the ingredients of which cost Pfizer less than a penny a capsule.
Uh-huh. That's quite a profit margin.
That's quite a profit margin going from a penny to $5.80 a pill. Yeah. So the big generic drug companies were geared up and ready to manufacture millions of these pills, which would retail at CVS or Walgreens for about 40 cents each. So let's face it, the generic drug companies are going to make 39 cents a pill.
Right. A profit.
A profit.
Right.
Okay.
Which is a lot of profit. Just
when they're talking about making hundreds, millions of these pills. Yeah.
Right.
However, Pfizer's highly connected drug lobbyists encouraged a very malleable Congress to extend Pfizer's patent protection by 18 months until December 2nd of 2015.
Oh, that was very nice of them.
And the last sentence of this paragraph is, Pfizer, by the way, is an excellent long-term investment.
Yeah. 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 That's the issue.
That's the issue. Uh-huh. And by the way, he also mentions that the dog drug is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug like ibuprofen. It is essentially a very similar drug to this body of drugs, but it's for dogs. And it is manufactured by a few companies, including Cipla, which is based in Mumbai. So maybe he could, this person who wants to invest in the stock,
blowing a call to Tom Friedman.
Could get Tom Friedman's cab driver.
What do you think?
Is this a good investment?
And as Tom Friedman's cab driver always says, what do you think?
Yeah, and actually, they have a higher profit margin. They wholesale for 1.4 cents each and retail for 67 cents each.
But that's our conversation now. Yeah. It's about long-term. How will my stock portfolio do with this medical decision? How will it increase my
how will it increase
bottom line?
The general flow of income toward me? That's what we got to talk about.
Yeah.
Which is a perfect segue for Bible Bitch. I know I'm monopolizing this podcast.
Well, you know, we're talking about capitalism, so monopolies are quite welcome.
And the Pope,
go for it, baby. Go
the
for
Pope
it.
Doesn't like capitalism.
No, apparently the Pope has
It's making some right wingers very uncomfortable.
You know, if I think the leftists have mistranslated the Pope. Rush Limbaugh, who always sounds like he's, first of all, he always sounds like he's trying desperately to take a dump, and he just can't quite squeeze one out. I think it's the OxyContin that's rotted his lower portion of his body. You have to take that up with Mrs. Limbaugh, who apparently lives apart from him. The fourth Mrs. Limbaugh lives apart from the gigantic, bloated, lying, racist asshole who
I would
is rich. Yeah. Let's face it. He has that going for him. He has a lot of money. But I don't listen to them on a regular basis, but I do sort
you
of sample
Sam
it.
Sam Sater has the 5-minute rule, right?
He does. Well, he has the 5-minute listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's about right. And I just, you know, I'm now spent a lot of time driving all over Hell's Half Acre.
And let's point out the news that broke this week that the county in which we live, Sangamon County in South Central Illinois, their county clerk, their county treasurer, and their sheriff are Republicans running unopposed.
Yep, unopposed. Nobody.
No Democrat is running against right. any for any one of those three countywide offices. That's where we live.
Yeah. So that's you just setting the mood, setting the mood there.
Yeah. So of course, Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck are on the radio when you turn.
So I hop in the vehicle and I spin around town, listening to it creak and moan and coaxing it a few more miles out of it. And I spin the radio and pretty much wherever it lands in the AM dial, you're going to hear Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh or a farm report or
Sean
sports.
Hannity. Yeah.
So, but every now and then I just like to tune in just to hear, because it's very important to understand that the reason your crazy uncle says the crazy things he does at Thanksgiving or in emails is because he listens to this guy every day.
Yeah.
Every single day he opens up his skull and lets Rush take a little dump in there. Mm-hmm. And he's been doing this for 25 years. And that's all your uncle knows. And then your uncle, you know, is got unsatisfied, dissatisfied, because eventually he had to get out of the car. And suddenly there's a TV show. There's a TV station that says exactly the same shit. It's called Fox News. Oh, glory be. If only I could find a church that would wait a minute. There's a guy named Jerry Falwell who preaches the exact same shit. So now he's got a completely enclosed universe. He has a legitimate paper like the Wall Street Journal, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch. And he has his own TV station and he has his own radio stations. And they all tell him, they all feed his paranoia back to him. They all feed his rage back to him. They all tell him he's not bigoted. Negroes really are lazy and they're trying to steal your women. So that's who I listen to mm-hmm. to find out sort of what's going on. And just zipping across to a couple of days ago, listening to the Communist Democrat Party. The Communists and the Democrat Party, who Democrat, of course, it's always the Democrat Party, who despise the private sector. They despise the private sector. Oh, and they like looting the private sector. It's the golden goose. They would just take and take and take. But those moochers, they just take and take and take. And it's just, and it's that way all day long, every day. This is the shit they fill their skulls with every day. Mm-hmm. So when you hear your crazy uncle casually dropping communist or fascist or Kenyan, and you wonder, where the hell did this sort of half-wit relative of mine get these concepts from? They're being spoon-fed into his skull by a very rich, very angry, very racist asshole named Rush Limbaugh. Mm-hmm. And they have been for a quarter of a century. And then I skip on down the dial when I got back from those errands and heard Glenn Beck explaining that if we all just wish hard enough, everything you ever dreamed of will happen. You know, like it's like Nikola Tesla. If we just try hard enough, we'll get energy out of the air, which is eerily similar to Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
And I have no idea where he's going with this, but it was this worldview that essentially, if we just dream and wish and will it hard enough, like Bill Kristol said about Iraq, we'll win. Everything we want will happen. We'll enter a new millennium of complete and utter open freedom and plenty for everyone. And if that doesn't happen, the only thing that's stopping that happen are the communists. And by communists, he means you, blue gal.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a communist. Yeah.
So there's this Elysium out there. There's this utopia just beyond the horizon, which we could get to. And everything would be fucking awesome. All of your dreams would immediately manifest themselves out of your skull into reality. You'd get laid like you've like President's Day carpet, you know? You'd get laid like crazy. And the only thing standing between you and the millennium are the stinking commie liberals who want to take it all away from you. And that's how it starts, ladies and gentlemen. That's how it starts. Yep. That's how we turn ordinary, stupid consumers into a mob willing to run over you, throw you in jail, take away your liberties, blame every problem they have on you, because there's a guy on the radio who tells them that they're within an inch of paradise, and the person standing between them and paradise is you. And they really believe it. That's the terrifying thing. These otherwise ordinary citizens actually believe this shit, and they actually put in place public policy that keeps pushing us in that direction, which is why when you or I turn on television and see Louis Gohmert or Michelle Bachmann, we're baffled by who in their right fucking mind would elect someone this patently stupid, this really sort of gas-sipping, inbred stupid, and elect lots of them. And then you look at Rush Limbaugh's audience and go, oh, those people.
Yeah.
It's those fuckers with their little hats and their little Gadsden flags and they're yapping about the Constitution. Those people are the ones who are screwing this country up. And they have their own media and they have their own They have their own Congress, and they're winning.
And they have a website called WorldNet Daily.
They do.
And we're going to end with a Bible bitch. Tea Party activist Jonathan Mosley, who co-hosts Conservative Commandos on the radio.
Is that Conservatives Without Underwear?
That's what I was thinking. Conservative Commandos, is that what they're doing? Yeah, I don't want to know about that. He published a WorldNet Daily column on Sunday because apparently they let anybody in there.
Like Rick Santorum.
Right.
Let's remember, former senator and presidential frontrunner Rick Santorum is also a WorldNet Daily columnist.
So just so I did not give any traffic to WorldNet Daily. This was written by rawstory.com.
Okay.
But Jonathan Mosley pointed out in his Sunday column that Jesus is weeping in heaven over the Pope's criticism of capitalism because socialism and totalitarianism are exactly the same.
They are. Everyone knows that.
And to argue with Mosley on his own terms, he pointed out that the Bible tells us, and I could just stop right there, but the Bible tells us that Jesus was not a socialist because he refused to negotiate a last will and testament between two brothers. He refused to redistribute wealth, which means he's not a socialist, okay? Mm-hmm. He's a capitalist. That automatically means he's a capitalist because he refused to redistribute wealth between two brothers in the Bible.
Boom, done. Microphone drop. Jesus out. But I have a feeling there's probably more to the story.
More to the Bible story than that. Yeah.
This asshole with his own column.
And there are liberals out there with Bibles in their houses.
And theology degrees on their
walls. Theology degrees go, oh, wait, I know that story. It's
weird.
In Luke 12. I know about that. Let me find that. Let me pull that out.
Well, didn't we invent a game in the car called Dadoku?
Dadoku, yeah. Figuring out what they would leave out. Yeah.
When you listen to the story, what pieces are obviously missing from this narrative so that it turns into a right-wing fairy tale?
It's the numbers 1 through 9 in every square, but there are no sevens.
And if we have a moment, we'll get to David Brooks's Dadoku moment on Meet the Press. Yeah. But please continue.
Okay. And this is a short Bible section. It's only a few verses, so it won't take too long. But it's the story of the greedy farmer, the parable of the greedy farmer. Someone in the crowd, and I'm reading this from the Modern Translation, which automatically disqualifies me, I realize, in conservative commandos, but I like this translation. Someone out of the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, order my brother to give me a fair share of the family inheritance." He replied, "Mister, what makes you think it's any of my business to be a judge or mediator for you?" That's not the same thing as refusing to negotiate a last will and testament.
No, it's refusing to be pulled into the middle of some drama.
Some family drama, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the lesson that he wanted everyone to get from this. Speaking to the people, he went on.
Remember, there's always a lesson for the people.
For the people, yes. Mm-hmm. Speaking to the people, he went on. Take care, protect yourself against the least bit of greed. Life is not defined by what you have, even when you have a lot.
It's almost like he used those two as a lesson for the crowd.
It's almost like opposite from what this guy said was happening.
Like a parable of some kind.
Here's the parable he told.
Uh-huh.
He told them this story. The farm of a certain rich man produced a terrific crop. He talked to himself, "What can I do? My barn isn't big enough for this harvest." Then he said, "Here's what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones."
Yeah.
"Then I'll gather in all my grain and my goods, and I'll say to myself, 'Self, you've done well. You've got it made and can now retire. Take it easy and have the time of your life.' Just then God showed up and said, 'Fool, tonight you die.'"
God did that a lot.
"Barn full of goods. Who gets it?" Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you fill your barn with self. And not with God.
Uh-huh. Of course, that's not a true story.
Don't get me started.
He insured the barn with Goldman Sachs and then burned it down and collected the money
and
on the back end of the deal.
Got the 10%.
Yeah. He sold derivatives against his own barn and then burned and had rating agencies rated as AAA. It's solid gold. This will never burn. Fuck, man. And then collected an ass load of cash on the back end. All tax-free, I might
add. All tax-free.
And all legal because Jesus wants it that way.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, freedom. Yeah. So
I do want to mention David Brooks's Dudoku.
Yes, let's do the Dudoku and then we'll end. Yes.
It's, you know, he's back from book leave, which is good. You know, the world's easiest writing job, one that involves lots of travel, lots of time off, vacation whenever he wants it. Go to Europe, sure. Springsteen concert, great. You want to appear in every, you use your credentials from the New York Times to get yourself a gig on PBS and NPR, and sure, make
not
a fuckload of money.
Davos and the Aspen Ideas Institute.
Yeah. You got the Wonka golden ticket. Mm-hmm. But apparently having being the laziest writer in America with the easiest job in America is too exhausting for David Brooks. So the New York Times gave him 3 months off, and he came back raring to go.
And single.
And single. I mean, he's
on the market, ladies. Yes, he is.
And it was just awful. It was just the same old, you know, I'm not surprised, but it really was.
You were hoping for better.
I was not really hoping for, but I kind of thought.
You wrote an alternative reality where that might happen.
Yeah. There are people who have sort of traumatic road to Damascus experiences every
day. Our own senator. Senator Kirk seems to be going that route. Yeah.
He does.
Yeah, I mean, his stroke just about killed him and disabled him for over a year.
Yeah.
He is a different person now than he was before that happened. Absolutely.
And we don't wish suffering on anyone.
No.
But suffering
does provide salutary benefits sometimes. Sometimes it does.
So occasionally, you know, who knows? Maybe David Brooks will come back and go, you know what? There's a lot of stuff I was wrong about. And maybe I really should be more humble about my own shit, not telling other people how they should be humble and honest and reticent. But no, he came back with a New York Times column about how government is incapable of doing anything that isn't basically writing checks. Government isn't nimble. It's just not smart.
Can't do healthcare.
The failure of the Affordable Care Act is not just a glitchy website. It is actually nearly as bad in some ways as the Iraq War, because you know you have to do a big thing and then execute it correctly, and that's what they said about George Bush in the Iraq War. So there's a kind of a parallel there, and government is just not nimble. It just can't do stuff like healthcare, despite the fact the government does healthcare right now. Does veterans care? Does Medicare? Does Medicaid? My mother is on a very efficiently run federal government healthcare program right now.
And I have family members that have been taken care of by the Veterans Administration just fine.
The Canadian government does health care. The British government,
the Mexican government has Celebrex for 60 cents a pill.
Come on, people. Party down there. Even during Margaret Thatcher's darkest days,
England had socialized medicine.
And by the way, I should mention that wasn't David Brooks's column on Tuesday. That was David Brooks on Meet the Press.
He simply reiterated
everything he said in his column that he had spent 3 months resting up to get back to. And it was essentially, you know, there's this scenario where the extremes on both sides, blah, 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 blah. And government is saying, government's, you know, I don't hate government. There's just some stuff it can't do, like all the stuff Republicans don't want it to do. Mm-hmm. It's just incapable of doing it, despite the fact that it is patently obvious that it is doing those things for tens of millions of Americans very efficiently.
They like it.
Right
and
now.
They like it.
And David Gregory, being a crack journalist, not just sleeping on the job, put his hand in his chin and looked dreamily at David Brooks and said, "Tell me more about that. That sounds exciting." At no point did any person actually stop and say, "But don't we have a Medicare program that's run by the federal government? And aren't people mostly happy with that? And doesn't that put a lie to the fact that government
with Republicans? Yeah, it is.
Doesn't that put a lie to the fact that government can't do health care?" But no, of course, this being a nepotistic circle jerk of friends who all protect each other and they have a mutual honor among thieves agreement, not to mention the fact that one of them is telling a big whopping lie right now, or one of them is wrong about something or whatever, that they just let slide right past. And David Brooks went right back to doing what he's been doing for years, which is just reading his New York Times column on TV for money. And so he's back from outer space. By the way, I should also note Illinois, because it's like we're not even trying here anymore, is only the fifth most potty mouth state in the country.
And number one is
Ohio, for some reason.
Ohio, where I'm from. No, we're not even trying if we're fifth.
No. Maryland is second. New Jersey is third. Louisiana fourth. And Illinois fifth.
Oh, Louisiana, excuse me.
But come on, people. We have this pension problem. Again, if we establish a swear jar, a statewide swear jar.
Pension with a swear jar, statewide swear jar.
We could both be number one in fuck you fuckers and pension take a significant have a significant bite out of the pension, all while enjoying ourselves with the sweet, sweet release that comes with a well-placed curse word.
Yes. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Chuck, and Chuck is female. And in this picture, she is wearing her Halloween costume and is dressed as a penguin. It's a very good costume, actually. I hardly recognize her as a cat. So congratulations, Chuck, on winning the kitty costume contest, I guess. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. We love hearing from you.
We do.
Feel free to write us. Be aware if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties who sleep 18 hours a day and poop like there's money on the line are now officially more productive than last year's United States Congress.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
We've been celebrating the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who.
We have.
For several weeks now. And I think the celebration will continue for many, many weeks to come because middle child, I mean, do I out her as a
heathen?
Heretic? She's starting a Doctor Who religion where Doctors 1 through 4 are the Old Testament.
Yeah, which is terribly clever.
And she's got songs and, you know, she went as the 11th Doctor as for Halloween.
Yes.
And that costume has been reused for the movie theater
The big Doctor Who event.
And the big Doctor Who event at the bookstore. Yes. And
many on regular daily occasions.
Yes.
It is not surprising that
she's
wearing a fez. Yeah.
She's wearing a fez around the house. So, yeah.
I see nothing at all wrong with that.
No. I think it's a perfectly reasonable costume for an 11-year-old.
But why has that show lasted so long?
Yeah. And why is it so popular now?
Why is it so popular with kids, especially? Why is it so...
And girls.
Because it's, on one level, it's a silly show.
Shut up, Hitler.
Yeah. On one level, it's a silly show. It's writers showing off in ways that writers just absolutely would not do in any other genre or venue.
Mm-hmm.
It's creating the most impossibly Rube Goldberg situation and having your hero deliberately, you know, look how complicated and weird this has all been and then we're going to have our hero extricate himself from it for 50 years with big gaps in between. But why has this show... Why am I still interested in this show when really the rest of science fiction can come or go? I lost my taste for it. And we had one of our listeners send us a couple of copies of Callahan's by Spider Robbins.
Yes, thank you. That was Raymond. Thank you, Raymond.
Which are very nice. And a reminder, I've read them and thank you. They're now in my.
But now we can pass them along to the oldest boy. And
I think I might have given them away on my move down here.
No, you didn't. I have Callahan's. I have the Callahan here, so okay. You didn't give it away. It's here.
Okay. Well, I can pass it along.
Yeah.
But it was Spider Robinson was and is a very humane writer.
Mm-hmm.
He always writes about the hopeful future, no matter how bleak and terrible and awful it is. The entire predicate of Callahan's was often having someone wander into this very special bar with seemingly insoluble problems, or a con man from the future, or a, you know, some the cockroach that pretended to be Hitler, so it could keep the world at war long enough to develop a nuclear weapon, thus guaranteeing the human race would wipe itself out. Lots of, you know, good, juicy science fiction ideas. But it was always this sort of group of bar regulars who were very smart and very creative and very humane who would figure out a way to solve the problem in a way that didn't involve mass killing, you know? And that's what Doctor Who has. It has a fundamentally humane vision of the hero, the intelligent, crafty, nonviolent, good-humored, good guy who is always up against impossible odds. And with the help of some plucky friends and a couple of miraculous devices and his basic wits and his basic unwillingness to break his rule about hurting people, he will figure out a way to solve the problem. And sometimes his friends die, and sometimes tragedy happens, and sometimes, you know, things come to an end. And sometimes we use time travel cheats of going back in time to tell yourself not to do a thing, or going back in time to plant something that you will then pick up. So you'll remember, yeah. Oh, that's right, I'll need a gun. You reach behind you, and there's a gun. What's it doing there? Well, future me went back in time and put it there. Just Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah.
But it is a certain sensibility about humanity's ability to solve its own problems. Of course, Doctor Who isn't human, but he really, really is.
And he's more than human because he has two hearts.
Yes.
And he is supposedly, to the rest of the world, the imaginary friend of Amy Pond. And I think with this 11th Doctor, and particularly the Amy Pond character, bringing up the origin of how, as a little girl, she waited for the doctor to come back.
Uh-huh.
And that it has such a fairy tale feel to it that I totally understand why Middlechild has gotten totally engrossed and is just adoring of this show.
Because
about female imagination and the power of it.
It took its focus off of the doctor.
Yeah.
And started focusing on his young, smart, capable, often slightly promiscuous, but always plucky.
And deeply emotional.
A deeply emotional female companion.
Yeah.
Without whom he is nothing.
Yes.
And it also has a fundamentally, I won't say utopian, but non-dystopian view of the world.
Absolutely a non-dystopian. The future is bright.
Yes. Yeah. And or can be. Yeah. Humanity is worth saving.
Yep.
It's worth coming back to this godforsaken planet over and over again to fight villains and keep them from screwing up humanity, because there's something about the human race that is worth saving. And if you watched the Colbert Report Tuesday night, I think it was, when he had the director, I think it was the director of JPL on, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, talking about Voyager leaving the solar system, leaving the bubble of the sun. And the grand tour that we went on and photographing the planets and this great adventure, you know, that just when you get your nose in the mud and you think about how awful politics are, believe me, we'll get to that in just a minute. There are things that are wonderful and uplifting and noble and heroic and have a vision behind them that spans thousands or millions of years. Our little pieces of technology are going to be slinging out there through space millions of years from now. If they don't hit anything, probably won't. Space is full of mostly nothing. And there are people who sit and think about the big, bright, possible future of humanity and don't think in terms of how to rip off their fellow man so they can make maximum profit in the next quarter. And fuck the future. Let's pollute it all now, use it all up now, because I'm here and I'm the most important thing God ever created.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that sensibility does infuse this silly show, and that's why I think it remains very popular and very attractive to people who don't want to look at the world and go, let's burn it all down. Everyone's an asshole. The humanity's a waste of carbon. Let the roaches take it. Anyway, that's my take on it.
We want to thank the listener who created in Minecraft something called Blue Driftstone. With his permission, we're going to post a link on our Facebook page to the article where he talks about Blue Driftstone. It makes you impervious to falls, and which is such a lovely thing. And Middlechild was impressed that the podcast had inspired someone to create a element or a stone in Minecraft. So
yeah.
Thank you very much. That was very, very special.
You've increased our cool quotient considerably.
I think so. At least among the certain age group that plays Minecraft. We really, truly do not play Minecraft. And although middle child has attempted to induce me to do that,
I've been threatened.
You've been threatened if you don't
learn really
Minecraft.
You really have to play Minecraft. You would love it. You should do it. You should play it. And, you know, middle child and I have a nice relationship.
You really do.
You have sort of a buddy, kind of very relaxed and very, mm-hmm. very
She
father.
Really opens up with you and just talks and talks. Yeah.
And I'm sure one day I will be induced to play Minecraft and get my ass kicked at whatever.
The time vacuum that I fear is.
I know. But I should know a little bit about
it. She thinks that it's completely. I mean, this is why parents do a good job. This is how parents do a good job. Uh-huh. The parenting is invisible to the children.
Right. Right.
You know, it doesn't take any time to be my mom.
It's effortless. And they wake up at you know, midnight and you're slogging up the fourth load of laundry because it has to get done. What are you doing up? I'm making sure the place doesn't fall down around your ears in the middle of the night. That's what I'm doing. Oh, okay. Good night. And it's not a matter of I don't ever feel impelled to wake people up at the soul's midnight and say, be grateful.
No.
That's not it. It's that sense that, someone is taking care of this.
Yeah.
And you know what?
The circle is unbroken because you had it happen for you too.
Oh, yeah. And I miss that.
You miss someone else doing your laundry?
No. I'm very good at basic household survival skills.
You are.
I know how to cook. I know how to do laundry.
Yeah.
And so if I want to, all the other basic skills. But this is sort of eliding over into a little bit of politics. So maybe we should save it for later. But out there somewhere, your government is quietly doing its job as just a normal thing. It's not mooching. It's not looting. It's not oppressing you. It's not stealing your freedom. It might be doing those things. It might be engaged in some sort of horrible secret war or whatever. I'm not saying that in any sense our country has ever been perfect or perfected in any way. I will stipulate to all the sins and crimes. But the idea that there were competent public servants out there at the federal and local and state level and municipal level who just did their job, who taught kids and collected trash and protected us and made sure that people crossed the street safely. And, you know, there was a Robert Heinlein shtick about visiting the nation's capital and looking at the steps of some federal building and admiring the handiwork and saying there was never enough bosses in the world to oversee all the concrete that got poured in this city to make sure they did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
They just did a good job because doing a good job is what you did. And, you know, quietly delivering the mail and quietly helping criminals out and quietly feeding people, those people all now have to shout because they are the ones who are being demonized.
Yeah.
The competent public servant who quietly goes about his or her business on my dime, on my behalf, trying to do a job to make my society a little bit better, a little bit cleaner, a little bit safer, are being systematically demonized by a political movement that is absolutely metastasizing cancer and needs to be cut out of our country and gotten rid of in some way, electorally preferably.
Mm-hmm.
But the sense that
the government is a boogeyman, I think we're going to talk about that in the regular podcast.
But the sense that you can sleep at night and not live in terror of your own elected officials is something that our kids have never experienced.
Yeah.
They only know that presidents are either monumentally incompetent if they're Republicans or constantly under siege by and trying to be impeached if they're Democrats.
Yep.
That the purpose of Congress is to do nothing and be proud of it. And that dysfunction is normal. And I want to talk a little bit about that in our regular podcast. But
let's get to that.
Yeah, let's get to that, shall we?
All right. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Bye.